Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol. There are so many big games across the world this weekend. The biggest, though, surely in the Spanish capital. Real Madrid taking on Barcelona. Second versus first at the top of the Liga. Just 2 points separate these Spanish giants going into the clash. Not ideal preparation, though, of course, for Real Madrid going into the game, coming off the back of that defeat against Manchester City at home. Panic at the White House is the front page of Sport. I want to welcome in Sid Lowe to the show. Sid, how much does that headline ring true to actually how Real Madrid are feeling going into this game?
Well, look, Sport is a pro Barcelona sports daily. The other big pro Barcelona sports daily is El Mundo Deportivo, who today went with almost exactly the same headline. They went with white panic. And of course, in part, this is wishful thinking from their point of view. But it's also about the response to the defeat against Manchester City, the fact that Real Madrid have dropped 5 points over the last 2 weeks in La Liga. And that sense that there is tension building. Not least, of course, because people remember what happened last year when Barcelona went to Real Madrid and beat them twice, knocked them out of the Copa del Rey, knocked them out of the league title race, and they were beaten by Ajax. All of that in the space of 8 days. And so there is this sense that, hang on, it's happening again. Zidane said last week, after the game against Levante, next week our entire season is at stake. Of course, that meant two games, City and Barcelona. They've already lost the City one, and now comes Barcelona. And it's that City defeat, I think, that has shifted the, if you like, the emotional balance going into this game.
Where is the finger of blame being pointed, Sid, after that defeat? And how is that going to change things going into the weekend?
Well, as I say, I mean, look, even on Monday, before that game, one of the headlines in one of the Madrid papers was talking about a psychosis, this sense of fear that the same thing as last year would happen again. And you thought, well, that's really exaggerated. But of course, by Thursday morning, at which point they had been beaten by Man City, it didn't feel quite like that. Now, there's a finger of blame pointed at Zidane, not least, of course, the decision to leave out Toni Kroos. I think there's been a sense that they allow themselves to collapse in the last 10 or 15 minutes. But I think the broader analysis, and obviously there's been some questions about the referee just because they're always are. I think the broader analysis, though, has looked at this and thought, actually, City were probably the better side for maybe 70, 75 minutes of this game. And that has brought to the surface those doubts that are much deeper lying at Real Madrid about whether they're scoring enough goals, whether that defensive solidity we saw as recently as 2 or 3 weeks ago was actually based on something that perhaps wasn't as tangible as we wanted to believe. And that maybe at Real Madrid are just not quite that good. Now, of course, the context of this, Dan, is that things aren't great at Barcelona either.
Yeah, that's interesting, boys, isn't it? It's not the Clásico that has been a few years ago. We had two real top teams going head-to-head.
It's amazing how things change, though, isn't it? Because the whole thing at the Nou Camp was burning. You could smell the smoke month ago, and now the worm has turned. It seems like it's... I know there's still issues at Barcelona, I understand that. But it seems the pressure has shifted somewhat. To go back to the game in midweek, I think the bigger concern, and Sid touched on it, was the fact that even City, who kind of never really got out of second gear for a lot of the game, but whilst they had their foot on the neck of Real Madrid, really could have finished them off. I mean, one header in the first half from Benzema was all they could muster. I know it got a little better for them after they scored, and City were under pressure for a bit, but then they took hold again. And I just feel they're not able to control the game like the ones did. I mean, I suppose it was a Kroos or Modric thing during the week, because obviously the Casemiro, Modric and Kroos, there's not enough legs in there anymore, so young Valverde plays, and that's a big decision for him at the weekend. What does he do? Because he needs to try and get control of that middle of the park. That's what they did so well when they were very successful.
What is he likely to do, Sid, regarding that 11?
That's a very good question, because Zidane does have a habit of surprising us. And, you know, of course, you look at the midweek game and the inclusion of Vinicius. Maybe we saw that coming, but nobody saw the lack of Kroos being a probability. And so I think what he will probably try and do is reinforce the midfield. Looking at that lineup there on the screen, I think you would say that's perfectly plausible. It's also plausible that instead of Vinicius, it's Isco that goes in there to try and create what Craig was talking about, that controlling midfield, the number of bodies in there, the players who can keep hold of the ball, which was what was so surprising about the absence of Kroos, because while it's true there are other good footballers in the team, he's the one that judges the pace of the game the best, that maybe doesn't kind of stand out, doesn't do really dramatic things, but gives them that degree of control that they lacked. And I think there are some very significant doubts. That's a perfectly plausible lineup. I wouldn't be at all surprised if we saw a variation which might be Isco instead of Vinicius, though.
Does that work for you, Stevie? Adding an extra man in midfield?
Absolutely. I think that's a smart move. It's, you know, Sid was talking about, they said there's two games for the season and one's gone and they've lost it. They can't afford to just go gung-ho to the wind and open up. So playing two up front and keeping it with four in the middle, I think it's a smart move, because Barcelona haven't been particularly strong in the middle of the park either. Mm-hmm. We know defensively they can be vulnerable, so it would make sense to be solid and then either hope that you can create, which you haven't done recently, or that they can make a mistake. I think that's a smart move. It would be.
Meanwhile, for Barcelona, Sid, they come into the game not exactly flying either. Craig mentioned the problems off the field, but also that game against Napoli was pretty boring.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? I mean, look, on one level, I suppose, and bear with me while I say this, because to start with, it might sound a little bit daft. I suppose on one level, given how poor Barcelona's away performances and results have been, I think I'm right in saying that it's only two victories in a knockout game away from home in 10 matches in the Champions League. You go away to Napoli, it's fairly dull. Apart from the moment when you got caught, though, you keep a certain degree of control. You get a 1-1 draw, and you probably think that's quite good. But yeah, absolutely. The response to this was, oof, this isn't very good. Napoli shouldn't be the strongest team in the Champions League. They should be a team that you can go away and beat. And that Barcelona lack the fluidity in the passing. They lack pace. They lack the ability to create chances. And that meant that on Tuesday night, there was a certain degree of pessimism, I think, in Barcelona about the Clásico. Of course, what changed it is exactly what we've just been talking about. Not so much a change at Barcelona, but a change on the other side of the divide.
How much does that play in the psyche of a player going into these big matches?
What?
The fact that you get a draw against Napoli, people are critical of you, but then you see your opposition lose 24 hours later. Does that play its part at all in the locker room, in the preparation?
Do you know, I think from a player's point of view, I'm not quite sure it does.
Right.
You've still got to go and do the job. In some sense, it might have been better for them if they'd played well against Man City and beat them, and then were a little bit cocky about it, whereas now they're under a little bit of pressure, Real Madrid, from their coach and from their fans and from the media in that part of Spain. And they're now looking for a reaction. So it's a little bit of a kick up the backside for them to say, hold on a minute, you know, we got a bit of a doing there against Man City. We need to up our game, change tactics, change players. And I think that's what we'll see from Zidane.
Players are so used to forgetting about the last one and you're coming on to the next one. You know, if you talk to any coach, that's all they talk about. Like, that's behind us. This is the most important.
So players aren't thinking, as Sid mentioned, this time last year, when it all went wrong with the Barca defeats and Ajax as well.
No.
That doesn't play into this.
No, not at all. Because when you're going into training, part of your job as a coach is to get everything bubbling and get everybody thinking about the next game and go through what you're going to do and all the positive stuff. So you kind of don't have a lot of time to think about the negatives. Because if you did, then that would be a problem. Players are used to just putting aside whether it's good or bad. Because if it's good, they'll go, right, you don't get anything for the next game because you were great. So you're concentrating on what you have to do, regardless of the opposition, to win the game.
This is Quique Setién's first Clásico, of course, in charge of Barcelona. Sid, it hasn't made that much of a difference, really, has he?
Well, I don't know. I suppose let's start by saying, in what way do you want him to make a difference? In terms of the results, I think there hasn't been a huge difference, although, of course, we will never know how the results would have gone with Valverde. I think in terms of the way that they're trying to play, the style, the mechanisms, I think we are seeing a shift. I think we're seeing a shift which has both its good side and its bad side. And I think we're seeing greater control. I think we're seeing a team that is trying to win the ball back quicker than it did before, that's pressing that little bit higher. But then I don't think there's too much doubt that, for example, the first game against Granada, when it was over 1,000 passes, I think when you look in particular at the game in Napoli, there are people looking at that and saying, well, this is Setién. So the possession is all there, but for what? And I think there is that doubt about whether they have yet got, or whether they will ever get, the speed of that ball circulation, the ability to open up spaces, which makes that possession really, really worthwhile. Now, the possession is useful, I think, in terms of control and protecting an otherwise quite vulnerable defence, but it hasn't yet proven to be useful in terms of creativity.
Are we expecting the same starting 11, Sid, as the one that drew in Italy?
I think we're expecting something broadly the same for one very simple reason. They don't have any other players. I mean, they genuinely, you know, they really don't have players. Barcelona, I think it's 15 first-team players available for this game. You look at that team sheet there, we have the doubt about Piqué. He did train today, so he may well start, in which case it'll be him with Umtiti or Longley rather than those two together. I think the midfield is very likely to be that free. There is a slight doubt about whether or not he plays Braithwaite up front or Ansu Fati in that Arturo Vidal role, but I think that, a bit like Zidane, he may well be conscious of trying to have as many bodies as he possibly can in the middle of midfield.
Take a look at how the bookies have this set going into Sunday's game. Not really separating them by that much. Real Madrid with the home advantage. Favourites, Barca only 2-1 though to take all 3 points. Let's get some predictions. Sid, I seem to remember you predicted 2-2 for the last 17 Clasicos.
That is exactly right. And that is how I intend to proceed always. By the way, I can give you some stats though that are quite interesting in this game.
We'll be the judge of that.
You know, yeah, okay. If Barcelona win this, it would be their fifth consecutive league victory at the Bernabeu. This is a place where they do go and win. They've won 8 of their last 11 at the Bernabeu. And it's not just Barcelona, by the way, because Quique Setién has been there 3 times as a coach and he hasn't lost yet. So it's 2-2.
He's almost got him off the edge.
Almost
got him off. Nearly got him off. My head says I could see Barca going there and winning, particularly with Messi when he's 4 goals was against Eibar last week. But my heart says a response from Real Madrid. You know, behind in the league, poor against City, probably will make changes at home.
Yep.
I'm going to go for a response from Madrid, and Madrid win.
Madrid win, Stevie.
I don't like the look of Langley and Umtiti as a pair. I mean, even Piqué's not 100%. At least his influence would make a difference. So I'm going to say that Real Madrid don't lose.
Before we let you go, Sid, who's this game bigger for?
I guess it's bigger for Barcelona. Bigger for Real Madrid, if only because Barcelona have a 2-point cushion. In other words, obviously, you know, forgive me for stating the bleeding obvious, but if Madrid win, it's only 1 point. The league title isn't over. But I think if Barcelona to win and it goes open to 5 points plus head-to-head goal difference, which effectively makes it a 5.5-point lead because that can't be overturned with 12 games to go, I think Real Madrid, to take you back to that discourse we were talking about at the start, we're playing for our entire season. It's 2 games that we cannot afford to lose. They've already lost one of them. So I think in that sense, it's probably bigger for Madrid in terms of the obligation to go and win.
Thank you very much, Sid. If you've ever wondered what it's like to referee in a Clasico, Sid went down and chatted to someone who's done exactly that. Be sure to check out his article over on the website. Just to remind you how big this game is. 6 points separate Juve and Inter Milan. Inter, though, have a game in hand. Of course, they win that, it'll be reduced to just 3 points. Let's welcome Gab Marcotti into the show, shall we, Gab? Unfortunately, the big storyline leading up to this match is the fact that no one will be able to watch it in the stadium.
That's right. What you're going to see is an empty stadium, maybe right around 400-500 people, between members of the media, team officials, stadium employees, and so on. But we're not going to get the kind of raucous atmosphere that you would expect from a game like this at the Juventus Stadium.
And how much is that going to affect the spectacle that we see on the pitch, Gab?
It's a good question. I mean, I watched Inter play Ludogorets last night. That was behind closed doors at the San Siro. It's an entirely different experience because you can actually hear the players shouting to each other on the pitch. You can hear the coaches egging them on. Obviously, it does take away from the spectacle, but you know, in the end, it is about the players on the pitch and. I think we're going to have a cracking game the way these two teams are going.
Well, let's hope so. Let's talk about Juventus showing their possible starting 11. How do you expect them to set up, Gab?
So, as you can see in this lineup, this is sort of the version which I think is the most rational version. It's been suggested that they'll go back to the 4-3-1-2 with Ramsey in the hole and Cuadrado at right back, Dybala and Cristiano up front. There's also strong suggestion that he might play the lineup that we saw in midweek, which it would be a 4-3-3, no Ramsey, Cuadrado in the front three, and Danilo coming in at right back. Why you would do that, I'm not so sure. Maybe he feels there's better matchups. I think in a game like this, you'd be better off trying to get your best 11 players into the lineup.
How much pressure is on Sarri going into this game, considering what happened in France midweek, Gab?
I think there's a fair amount of pressure. Some people going so far as to say it's, he's got three games to sort this out. He's top of the league, and it's his first season. And I think the way Juventus think, they're not going to go and fire somebody in midseason just for the heck of it. What I do think, though, is that this team has to show forward progress. You can probably count on one hand the number of times that they've played really well this season, the number of times that, you know, we've seen what Sarri was supposed to bring. One of them, funnily enough, when they played Inter last time around, of course. But, you know, that's not going to do you any good. I think this might actually be a situation where Juventus could win the title. And if they go out early in the Champions League and if they don't show any signs of progressing as a team, not just in terms of results, and Juve think that they can get their man, they can get somebody better in, then he might go. But I'd be shocked if there was a change in midseason.
Meanwhile, Gab, for the visitors, any place in the starting 11 do you expect for Christian Eriksen?
That's one of the big questions. Personally, I don't see how you can leave him out, but his intention seems to be he's unsure whether to play Vecino, who obviously more of a defensive midfielder, or Christian Eriksen. There's a doubt as well at the back, Godin or Bastoni. I think in the end, I mean, I would lean towards Bastoni, but who knows what he's going to do. And then, of course, the other big question mark is the goalkeeper. Handanovic, of course, had that broken finger. It's taking forever for this to heal. Indication is that he might be ready. If not, it's going to be Daniele Padelli again, who, you know, he's got lovely blue eyes, but he's not a particularly good goalkeeper, or a goalkeeper who's going through a particularly good spell, as we've seen in the last couple games.
For you boys, what's the most intriguing element about this match?
Well, I mean, a couple of things. One, you know, if we know Inter play a back three, and Gab's talked about possible Juventus formations, but if you want to really push them back, then you play three up, you play two wide, and Ronaldo through the middle, and you peg the wing backs back, then you can dominate the game. The other side of the coin is Chiellini's match fitness and match sharpness. We know he's been out for a while, going up against the speed and physicality of Lautaro Martinez and Romelu Lukaku. If he plays, is he ready for that physical battle with the injury woes that he's had?
It's hard not to think, because there's nobody there, who's this going to affect more? And you have to think that it's going to affect Juventus more, because part of the advantage of being home is you've got 50,000 people screaming you on. That isn't going to be there. I think this is going to affect Juventus way more than Inter Milan.
Let's take a look at how the bookies have things set then. As Stevie said, of course, Juventus home, but with no home support. 5-4, they are favourite. Inter, 12-5. Craig, what's your pick for this?
Draw.
Yeah. Seems a natural thing to say, isn't it? It's weird.
Yeah, I just think, you know, Inter on the road, even at home, we know what they do. They sit in quite a lot, even more so away from home. I think Inter can get goals in the game, particularly with the front two that I mentioned, but I'm going to sit in defence. I'm going to say draw.
It's got to be a draw. Juventus don't have to go for it. And I don't think Inter Milan are going to go there and try and go for it.
Right.
It's got draw written all over it.
Gab?
I think a lot's going to depend on, of course, Lazio playing earlier. They could actually move ahead of Juventus. I think that's something that could spark Juve a little bit, because obviously they don't want to fall into second place. I think Stevie made a great point about the crowd. Where Juve have played better this season, it's actually the crowd that has given them that sense of urgency. And if you remember Sarri complaining that they play too slow, my concern is that they might play slow again against Inter, and that Inter might nick something, either, you know, through an individual or a set piece. And for that reason, I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that Inter can take this.
Wow. Well, for more on this game, be sure to download the latest edition of the Sarri Awesome podcast, which is available now. popular surprise in the Premier League today. Norwich City, bottom of the table, beating third place Leicester by 1-0. Leicester still 9 points clear of Manchester United in fifth. Should be fine for the top four. Well, the bookies certainly think so. 6-1 on to qualify for the Champions League next season.
Well, top five maybe would do.
Yeah, indeed. Obviously, as it stands with City's ban.
But you could see one of the teams maybe putting them under pressure. Maybe it would be Man United. But you couldn't see United, Tottenham, Wolves and Sheffield United all going all the way. So I think they've probably just about done enough, although it's just unravelling for them a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we're 9 points, so it's basically, we've got a three-game advantage. I can't see how Leicester don't come out of the funk they're in right now, because they do have quality. And I don't see how the other teams, at least particularly, can't. There's no way they go undefeated.
It's strange, isn't it? They're kind of almost the victims of their own success in that they've had such a great start to the season.
And then I went there.
Yeah, and then you went there.
You put a course on.
I went there early December to cover a game, and since then they've been on a bit of a downward spiral.
And meanwhile, for Norwich, a genuine lifeline, despite the fact they're bottom, they are only 4 points off safety. Stevie and Craig, Shaka as well, resident tipsters on the Daily Wager. Be sure to check that out when you get the chance. As they're here, we may as well take advantage of you boys. Quick fire through some of the games this weekend. Carabao Cup final, Aston Villa against Manchester City at Wembley. Bloomin' egg. Manchester City are 20-1 on, Aston Villa 10-1.
Might have something to do with the beat them 6-1 in the league.
Stevie's to go first on this, apparently.
All right. Well, I was just giving you a little...
I mean, give me a reason to go for Aston Villa.
I don't know, Stevie.
Wigan in the FA Cup final.
Yes.
There's your only reason.
There's your reason.
And does lightning strike twice?
I don't know.
Well, if it doesn't, City win.
Good.
Manchester City, hands down.
Meanwhile, in the Premier League, let's take a look, shall we, first at Bournemouth against Chelsea. Chelsea odds on to take all 3 points. I'm going to bounce back off that disappointment against Bayern. Stevie?
Yeah, I'm going for Chelsea here. I think he'll probably start Giroud, and I think he'll probably score. So I'm going Chelsea.
Chelsea to win it?
Over Abraham. Giroud starts, 2-0 Chelsea.
Meanwhile, Watford taking on Liverpool. Liverpool, of course, looking to continue their unbeaten run. 5-12 on to get the win. Watford, meanwhile, 6-1.
Again.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard to come up with a reason why Liverpool don't win, so I'm not going to come up with one.
Watford will make it difficult at home, I think, for a little bit, but Liverpool come out narrow winners 2-1.
They can continue that invincible run. Meanwhile, Spurs take on Wolves. Maybe slightly harder to call. Looking at it, Spurs favourites, of course, with home advantage. Just 1 point separate them in the table. It's going to be a really interesting tie, isn't it?
I'm going Wolves win. Tottenham have got results recently, and I've no idea how, because I haven't been playing any good football. Mm. But somehow they've been scraping points. But Wolves, I think they're perfect. They're good going forward, and Tottenham will let them come at them. I think that will be a mistake. I think Wolves are going to win this.
But Tottenham haven't been impressive, there's no doubt about that. Not good to watch. Haven't really got on the front foot, but Wolves are coming off the back of their Europa League. And then have to travel again to London. So I've gone for a draw.
Meanwhile, Everton taking on Manchester United. 3-2, Everton. United outsiders at 2-1. You take a look in the table. Just 5 points separate them, yet one's in fifth, the other 11th.
I'm going to draw here. Historically, United don't do well against Everton away. So I'm going to go with history, and I'm going to go with a draw.
Yeah, I mean, they were a threat last week at Arsenal, Everton, particularly with Calvert-Lewin's pace. Mm. Big and physical, they've certainly looked better under Ancelotti. United away from home again, after the back of Europa League, I'm the same as Stevie. Going for a draw in this one.
Manchester United, of course, in today's Europa League draw. Let's just take a look at that in all of its wonderful glory, shall we? Have you got Wolves against Olympiacos? Olympiacos, of course, responsible for knocking out Arsenal. Inter Milan against Getafe. Sevilla taking on Roma. Rangers against Bayer Leverkusen. According to the bookies, Manchester United 9-2. That's interesting. Inter Milan at 4-1, Wolves 11-2, Sevilla 7-1. Who we got, boys, to win this?
Wolves is a good bet, 11-2.
Yeah, you're loving a bit of Wolves at the moment.
It's just amazing. Do you know what? If you're going to watch anybody, go and watch Wolves. They try and play, they try and create, and they try and score goals. And right now, they're doing all of those things.
You just bought shares in Wolves. What's that?
What's that?
Don't buy shares in anyone at the moment.
I've gone for Inter Milan. But
really?
What do you mean, really?
Well, I just thought that they might be distracted with the old title race.
Well, that was the caveat that I was just about to give.
Oh, okay.
That you stole. Something.
And Getafe knocked out Ajax.
I know that. I guess I've gone for Inter dependent on Conte's team selection.
Okay.
I'm a bit concerned. No, I'm not really. I'm concerned that he'll leave a lot of players out because he's gone for the title. You're right. But if he doesn't,
right,
I think they're the best team still in it.
Thank you very much, James. Just a reminder, a podcast is available from us every single day. You can check it out over on the website or you can download it over on Apple Podcasts.
There's Crispy. And then there's Crispy. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy.
Thank you very much for all your tweets. Welcome to Extra Time. Whose performance in the round of 16 first leg was the worst and why? What are you going for, gents?
I think I'd have to say Liverpool.
Oh.
I mean, not because they got beat, because, you know, anybody can lose a game, but I think the way they lost it, I mean, they just weren't at it at all. And they were actually fortunate that they're only 1-0 down. It could have been 2 or 3. So, I think I'll say Liverpool.
Liverpool?
It was between PSG and Madrid, and Real Madrid. But I think I'm going to have to say PSG losing to Dortmund. Bearing in mind, Madrid were playing City, and they are not everybody's favourites, but they're the bookies' favourites at the moment. So I'm going to say PSG.
Sid Lowe's with us as well. Sid?
Well, I mean, I know this is a game that probably was the least watched of all of this round of games, but Valencia in Milan against Atalanta were absolutely awful. And they're basically out. They basically know they've got no chance. They could have conceded even more goals than they did. So that was the worst. Obviously, of the big names, then I suppose I'm tempted to go with Stevie. I think, you know, of course, everybody knew that it wouldn't be easy against Atletico Madrid. But given how Liverpool have been playing, I think we all expected them at least to score.
How excited is Craig for the Hall of Fame? Of course, Premier League announced yesterday there will be a Hall of Fame.
It's right up your street.
Yeah, I haven't read the minute detail of it.
Well, I've pretty much summed it up. There's going to be a Hall of Fame for the Premier League.
An American-style Hall of Fame, which means nothing to me because I don't know. And I've seen people chipping out who have no interest.
No?
No.
If they invited you to go?
It's like the fifth... What do you call that Scottish thing? We're playing for Scotland.
Scotland
Hall of Fame for having 50 caps.
What was the name of the Hall of Fame in Scotland?
Yeah, the Hall of Fame.
I finished with 46 because I retired in the flight. Who cares?
No.
Get 15 years. Have you seen some of the daubers that are in it?
No.
Good grief, they're giving caps out like confetti. So no, I'm not. I don't bother with
this. Is there a Spanish Hall of Fame, Sid?
No, but La Liga, who over the last 2 or 3 years have tried really, really hard to build on some of these things that the English League do, will, I think, do one fairly soon. You know, there's now a Player of the Year award that there wasn't officially until about 5 or 6 years ago. They're starting to push this kind of thing a lot, so I think there will be soon.
I heard the Premier League are going to do the opposite. They're going to tag on to the Spanish emergency signing thing.
Ah, well, that leads us on to the next question, actually.
Oh,
I'm a fan of Craig and Barcelona. This person seems torn now. Since the Braithwaite signing, I feel we started to hate Barca and I'm heartbroken. Oh, breaking hearts everywhere, Craig.
It actually wasn't Barcelona's fault.
And the Spanish league. Mm.
Correct.
Yeah. You don't hate anyone.
Don't hold grudges. I just was a bit frustrated. What are you looking for? Don't hold grudges.
Oh, yeah.
I don't hate Barca, no. I don't hate him. I was frustrated. I was more upset for Leganés.
Exactly. Big Leganés fan.
And now they can't go. Oh, that's a different part.
You love an underdog, don't you?
Yeah.
He loves an underdog.
James Rodriguez's situation is very strange, Sid. Why isn't Zidane playing him? Because every time he's played this season, he's done great.
Yeah, I think I probably wouldn't quite go so far as to say that he's been really great every time he's played, but I find it slightly baffling because one of the things about James Rodriguez is his delivery is so good that even if he has a game where he doesn't play well, you know he will provide at least one, maybe two clear chances in that match. And so it's surprising, particularly in the context of Zidane doing quite a lot of rotations. If you're going to do a lot of rotations, it seems odd not to use him more.
Final question, is there a Scottish equivalent to Shaka's Carnival?
Well, we've got the Highland Games.
Right.
So if you like tossing the caber.
What is tossing the caber for people who don't know?
Stevie?
So right, lads, it's basically a telephone pole.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
And what you got to do is try and flip it the other end up.
Okay.
But the straight, if you can get it to go straight over, you get more points.
Straight over what?
Without
touching
the ground.
If you flip it straight.
I don't
know. So what you're trying to do is flip it straight, right?
Okay.
If it goes side to side, you lose points.
Right. Have you ever tried it?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's big gentlemen.
Yeah.
Or ladies.
Well, right.
No. It's a Highland thing.
Right, okay.
What about the Edinburgh tattoo? Would that count?
The Edinburgh Festival is...
Yeah, that's a comedy festival.
It's a comedy
it?
Festival.
Yeah.
But you also have the tattoo, don't you?
It's quite carnival, though, isn't it?
I'm just giving you options.
What's the tattoo? What's the tattoo, for people who don't know?
It's at Edinburgh Castle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically... It's just music.
Right.
As much as anything else.
Sid? Did I see your son dress up for, like, your village carnival? Yeah. Yeah, they went different things each day. So one day it was they had to go in brightly coloured clothes. The next day it was in pyjamas. And the next day it was in medieval gear. So it was a knight with a shield and all that sort of stuff.
You know, when we're losing at... in the Highland Games, this is how bad it's got. Scotland were not qualifying for major tournaments as they are now. And the rugby team was getting beat. And I said, at least we've still got tossing the caber.
Yep.
To which point somebody tweeted me and said, well... Yeah, but that was won by an Englishman last year.
Oh, it's all going wrong.
So, or something. We can't even win. We can't even win. We're tossing the cable now.
Would you call the one where they get the? It's like the big, the big kettle weights.
Yeah.
And they chuck them over the crossbar. Would they actually call that?
In Cornwall, we had welly wanging, where you had to get the welly and chuck it over the thing.
See, that's just stupid.
That's because in Cornwall you've got nothing better to do.
That's about 16 pounds of cider.
Yeah. Oh, let's get some Wellington boots.
Who can throw the wellies the furthest?
Welly wanging. I promise you, it's a thing. Thank you very much. Thanks to Sid as well. We got a brilliant weekend, haven't we? Football to keep us entertained. We will be with you every day, especially on Sunday. Real special show right across ESPN Plus for 73 hours. Be sure to check that out. Until next time, goodbye.